This podcast is brought to you by Estée Lauder Company's UK and Ireland's breast cancer campaign. The campaign helped to make the opening of Future Dreams House possible and continues to raise millions to help end breast cancer. The house offers practical and emotional support to those diagnosed with the disease.
Hello, I'm Victoria Derbyshire. I was 46 years old and getting on with my happy life. I didn't feel as though I had a care in the world. And then came breast cancer. This is the second series of this podcast brought to you by the Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity. And it's for those of you who've experienced a moment like that. It's for all the challenges and hurdles you'll try to overcome. The highs as well, actually. And it's for everyone in your life who's affected by your diagnosis. Family, friends, work colleagues, the people who care for you, who hold you close, the people you lean on. In series one, we talked about all sorts of things: hair loss, faith, secondary or advanced breast cancer, exercise, what happens with your work, and so much more. Today, we're going to talk about what happens when you finish treatment, what that feels like, and what comes next. And we've got four women to talk through their own experiences. Hello, ladies.
Hi, my name is Delassie. I am a mother. I was 28 years old when I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2019. I didn't really have much awareness on breast cancer. And obviously I heard about it, but personally examining my breast and things like that, I wasn't really aware of it. And if I'm honest with you, I just thought I was too young to have breast cancer. So it never really... I never really thought I would get the disease. Mm. So it came as a massive shock. It was a massive shock, but I am in remission now.
Brilliant.
I've had about 16 rounds of chemo. I had radiotherapy, a lumpectomy, and a year's worth of Herceptin as well. So
thank you, Dee. Yeah. You're very welcome. Delassie, what a wonderful name. What does that mean?
God's gift.
Does it? Oh, yeah. My gosh. I love it even more. you are very welcome to our podcast.
Okay. I'm Kelly. I'm 41 today, actually.
Oh, my goodness. Happy birthday.
I'm a mum of two, married, and I was working for the NHS, actually, at the beginning of the pandemic when I was diagnosed. I was diagnosed last July, 3 months before my 40th birthday, with a stage 3 lobular breast cancer. I've had a mastectomy, I've had chemo, radiotherapy, I'm on tamoxifen now and taking 6 monthly zoledronic acid infusions because I tested positive for the BRCA2 gene. So I've had to have a risk reducing operation to remove my ovaries. I've also got an operation planned for early next year to have a mastectomy of the other side now, also for risk reducing, and then bilateral reconstruction.
You've got a lot going on, haven't you?
Yes.
You really have. Goodness me. Thank you for joining us on your birthday. We are honoured, aren't we? Cody, so hello.
Hello. Happy birthday, Kelly. My birthday is on Saturday.
Happy birthday.
My name is Cody Gapari. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2014. I'm a mother of two. My way of dealing with breast cancer was something that I called lipstick and heels. I decided that I was going to look as fabulous as I could every single day, particularly on days when I was going for chemo. On the back of this, I discovered that there were no false eyelashes for people who'd lost their lashes. So I came up with a product called C-Lash that's specifically for people without lashes in collaboration with ILO. So it launched in Boots in 2019. And now we are in quite a few countries and it's doing really well.
Wow. That's impressive. Goodness me. Thank you, Cody. You're very welcome. Sarah, hello.
So, yes, my name's Sarah. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2016. I had a rare form of breast cancer, which meant I didn't actually have a breast lump anywhere in my breast or chest. I had surgery to remove all my lymph nodes. Chemotherapy, radiotherapy, Herceptin. I'm now on tamoxifen. Since finishing my treatment, I set up an online community and website called Ticking Off Breast Cancer, and I've recently joined Future Dreams to run their online support hub.
Brilliant. I want to ask all of you, what did you feel like moments after you completed treatment? Dee?
For me, it was like I'd finished a marathon, and it was almost like a celebration. I was happy. I was ecstatic to finally finish. And then reality kind of hit after.
Okay, we'll come back to the reality, as you call it. What about you, Kelly? How did you feel moments, minutes after you'd finished treatment?
I wanted it to be a celebration. I was really excited about the end of it. But actually, the reality for me was that I instantly felt like I'd stepped off the edge of a cliff.
I had all my family with me. So you ring that bell, and the thing that you expect is elation, and you wait, and it doesn't come, and it's quite confusing, because you think this is the moment that I've been waiting for. I should be hitting the roof, but it didn't quite happen like that.
And when you say ring the bell, I want to explain, we try really hard to explain everything on this podcast. For those who are new to this and may not be as far along in their experience of breast cancer, what do you mean by ring the bell? What's going on there?
I had chemotherapy and then I had radiotherapy. And on the last day of your radiotherapy, there is a bell in the treatment center that you literally ring to signify that you've finished treatment. And everybody in the center who can hear the bell, they'll just come and they'll all make a big fuss of you and they'll all clap for you.
Wow. By the way, there isn't always a bell. There was no bell when I finished radiotherapy.
I didn't have a bell.
No, I didn't there was either.
I would have absolutely loved it if there'd been a bell to ring. I've got to be honest.
So I
feel like I missed out there. Anyway, Sarah, how did you feel moments after you finished treatment?
Actually, talking about the bell, that's really relevant to me as well, because when you asked the question, I was thinking, gosh, actually, it's quite a long time ago. How was I feeling? And what I can remember is the last few sessions, the nurses talking about the bell, because they had recently got one of these bells, mm-hmm. and they were getting quite excited about the fact that I was nearing the end of my treatment and could ring it. So when I finished, I remember sort of being ushered out to this bell, and my mum was with me, and my mum was so excited that I was ringing the bell. I'm getting quite emotional now. But all I remember feeling was completely deflated and scared and, yeah. Oh my goodness, what happens now? I didn't have a celebratory feeling about it in the slightest. And I rang the bell for my mum and the nurses because they were all so happy. And I put on a smile, but I really didn't feel very happy.
Why didn't you feel happy? You'd come to the end of treatment. You'd survived. You'd got through it.
I think it had started to hit me what had happened. And I think that was that kind of the culmination of, okay, I have finished, but what have I just been through? And I think it was at that point that was when I was thinking, because throughout treatment, you don't think about what you're going through. All you think about when you're going through treatment is putting one foot in front of the other and getting to the next appointment, the next chemo session, the next radiotherapy appointment. It's all about the next thing in your treatment plan. And you're just going on a day-to-day basis. You don't look far ahead. And when you come towards the end of treatment, you do started to allow myself to think a little bit further ahead. And I think it was that combined with allowing myself to open my mind to what I've been through. And I really felt completely overwhelmed by what had happened and what was ahead of me.
Delassi, you were nodding as Sarah was talking there, and you talked about, and then reality hit. What was your reality then?
So very similar to Sarah. Initially I was excited. I was like, oh my gosh, no more hospital appointments, no more having to do this, that and the other. But I had a lot of side effects from chemo. And I just mentally, I just thought, okay, chemo's done now, so I can just snap back to normal. Things will just get back to normal. I can get back to work, be a mum to my son and stuff like that. But it just was far from reality. I had neuropathy in both my hands and my feet.
What's that?
It's nerve damage. So you get, so the chemotherapy, it damages like a lot of your good cells, the bad cells, and it damages like your veins and stuff as well. So I have now nerve damage in both my hands and my feet. So I constantly have this pain, tingling, pain, numbness in my hands and my feet. So just doing basic stuff like cleaning, walking, driving, just day-to-day stuff is just an issue now. And I never thought that I would still be dealing with these things after chemo. I'm fatigued a lot of the time as well. I don't know. I just thought that, okay, once chemo's done, just things snap back to normal. Mm. And it was just far from the case. I mean, 2 years on, I'm still dealing with the side effects from chemo and stuff too.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard to explain to people as well what you're going through.
I get that. And just for those listening, the kind of side effects that you've described from chemo still affecting you 2 years on, Delassie, it's not inevitable. It doesn't happen to everybody. Mm. But obviously it's what's happening to you. And that is just rubbish, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
What would you say, Kelly, in terms of your reality?
Very much the same. When I finished treatment, like I say, I felt like I stepped off the edge of a cliff because I'd been working so, or not working so hard, but going through such grueling treatment to deal with this cancer. And when it got to the end of it, suddenly I wasn't doing anything to keep it at bay. I wasn't doing anything to kill it off. The war was over, as it were. And everyone thinks that's the point where you're going to go back to normal life and that's it, the battle's over. But in actual fact, that's the part where I felt most delicate, because you're not doing anything actively to stop it coming back then. Mm. And that's obviously most people's biggest fear, certainly mine. Mm. And I find as well that I kind of contradict myself a bit. I kind of want my life to return to normal. I want people to treat me the way they always did. I don't want pity, because that makes me feel like I'm in a really bad situation. Mm. And I want to put it all behind me. But at the same time, I want people to know that it's nowhere near over for me. Physically, I still have the chemo fog. I used to have a very sharp mind, and I feel like that's completely different now. I get tired still. I just mentally don't feel the same anymore. There's always that distraction of the fear, and I work hard to put it out of my mind, but it's always there. And you kind of grieve, really, for the assumptions you had about your life and your future. That certainty is taken away, and that's a big adjustment to have to come to terms with. Mm. So, and I wasn't ready for that.
Fair enough. For those, by the way, who want to listen to an episode about how you manage the fear of breast cancer returning, then do have a look elsewhere in series two, because we have talked about that.
Yeah, for me, like I said, you've got your family there and there's an expectation, you know, everybody is shouting and you get caught up in, I need to shout with them and I need to be happy with them. But it's quite interesting when Kelly said, you know, the war is over. I felt exactly the same. The war is over. But now the troops are packing up and they're going home. And, you know, the United Nations is leaving. But you're left with a broken city and you expected to build it on your own. And it just feels like you're left with a very, very new reality that nobody actually tells you what to do with. Because for me, there was a transition from chemotherapy that was very grueling to radiotherapy that was slowly getting me back into my reality. And I did something that was probably more it was not very helpful. I became the strong Black woman I was doing, going over and above the call of duty. And because I was doing all these things, I was in the gym before I finished treatment. I was running 10K Race for Life, finished in April, and I was running in July that year. Everybody thought I was doing okay. So physically, I was killing it, but mentally, I really, really was struggling. And it for me, it was the hardest time. The first year, part of the second year, I was dragging myself through. And I felt guilty about feeling any other way because I had survived and other people didn't.
That is such a good point. And who else agrees with that? That you you're thinking, often you're thinking, oh my God, what the hell just happened about your own treatment and your own experience, however long it lasted. And then immediately it's like, well, hang on a minute. I shouldn't be thinking about that. I'm alive. I've survived.
I've survived. Other people didn't make it. For me, I felt I needed A, to be strong for my kids and to show everybody that I've survived and I'm grateful for being alive. I was struggling and I didn't go and look for help when I should have.
I remember sitting with my oncologist just after my treatment had ended and saying to him, I feel like I should be sitting here grateful that I'm here, and I should be sitting here feeling positive about the future and all of that. And I had said, I should. And he said, that's a lot of shoulds there, Kelly. And in actual fact, you've got to remember that the treatment we've put you through is really tough. We've inflicted a lot on your body. And it's going to take your body and your mind a long time to recover from that. And you've got to be kind to yourself and allow that time to heal. So that always stuck with me because I did have this picture of how I should be feeling at the end of it all. And I should be euphoric. And actually, I felt completely lost.
Did anyone think, having gone through treatment, that even if you did want to talk about it with friends or family or your mum or your sister or whoever, that actually you didn't want to keep going on and on about your cancer?
Yes, yes, yes.
Look, I can see Delassie smiling there. And Sarah, go on, Delassie. Does that ring a bell with you?
Yeah, I mean, currently that's how I feel. I feel like I'm always going on about it and I'm boring people about it.
That's how I felt. It's like I can't keep boring people about it. Not even my husband, you know?
So I tend not to even talk about it. Sometimes I find myself just talking to myself sometimes, you know, just because I don't want to hinder or bore anyone with my thoughts and stuff. I did think about getting some form of therapy.
I did. Go on. Have you done it, Delassie, or not?
I keep saying I'm going to do it and then I never do, but I am. It's on my to-do list.
Mm. What's stopping you?
I was...
I don't know. I think it's similar to, I think it was what Sarah was saying about, like, you know, when you're going through it, you don't...
process.
Yeah, you don't process it. So doing the therapy means I have to process everything that I've gone through in the past 2 years. And I think I'm kind of scared to do that.
Oh, that's interesting.
In all honesty.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think I am the opposite. I don't talk about what I'm going through. And so much so that even my kids were 15 and 8 when I was going through treatment. I tried not to even tell them what I was going through because I didn't think that they needed, but I didn't realize my kids knew the whole time that I was trying to keep it from them. And I was given my diagnosis at 3 in the afternoon, and I went for an interview at 6 that same day. I didn't miss a beat at all.
Hang on a minute, Cody. You went for an interview, a job interview, or what?
So I'd been wanting to be a lawyer for the longest time. And for the past 5 years, I'd been working towards getting into uni. Mm. So finally, I've got my interview date, the 11th of August, 2014, at 6 o'clock. And that was the same day that I was going for my results. But I didn't for a moment think, let me cancel my interview. I just went and I got given my results. And before they even started talking about my treatment plan, I just gathered my things and I ran to Manchester Metropolitan for my interview.
Oh, my God. And when you look back on that now, what do you think of the fact that you just powered on through that afternoon?
My story, I've always said that my story is not the story to tell someone who's going through cancer treatment because it's very toxic. I went for my interview. I started college. I did a 10K race 3 months after, 6 months after I climbed Ben Nevis, nine months after I did Tough Mudder. I just did it. And my son said to me later on, because, you know, it's like, I never let anybody in. I just did everything by myself. I drove myself to most of my appointments. And my son said, you hurt us because we would have healed by letting us help you. But you never allowed us to heal because we were never in there with you. So you were doing great, but we were not.
I can relate to that. Although I have talked to people a bit more than you did, but I did hold back quite a bit. But I did take up the offer of counselling, which is something I've never done before, so I was a bit hesitant, but I knew I was in a place where I needed to talk to somebody, so I went ahead with it. And actually, the thing I've come to realise is that people are prepared to talk to me about it, and they want me to. I assumed that people didn't want to hear it, but actually, they don't ask about it all the time because they think that's me not wanting to talk about it. And I've had, you know, all sorts of situations where I have spoken to people about it now and they seem really open to it. And actually, it has really helped.
Helped you and them, by the sounds of things.
Yes, absolutely.
Sarah,
absolutely.
What about you in terms of talking to somebody?
Yeah, I also saw a counsellor, actually.
Can I just... Were you all offered counselling? Because I definitely wasn't.
Yes.
Yes. I did. They did a needs assessment at the end of my treatment and asked. I was asked all sorts of questions. And as a result of that, they were recommended that I was referred to Macmillan for counselling.
Okay. Delassie, were you offered?
I had to take that up, though. I had to take the action.
I was offered it during chemo.
Okay. Cody?
But not after.
I wasn't, but then again, I forget a lot of things. Maybe somebody did mention it in passing, but I don't remember.
You weren't in the place where you were going to talk to anyone. You've already described that, Cody. You were just like, you were going to sort everything. Sorry, Sarah, do carry on. You were offered counselling and...
I think I was... one of the chemo nurses said to me fairly early on in chemo... I don't even think I'd started chemo. I think I'd just gone to the hospital for that sort of first pre-assessment session. And she said, are you talking to anyone? Are you seeing counsellor? And I said, no. And she said, well, we know someone who can recommend. We recommend our patients to our breast cancer ladies. And we've got a very good counsellor who we can recommend. And I was all, no, I don't need to see anyone. This was very early on. And I kind of felt that I had it together and I was all sorted. And they kept reminding me throughout treatment, not all the time, but really, I suppose it was during radiotherapy that one of them mentioned it again. And it was coming to the end of radiotherapy. It was coming to that point that I mentioned earlier where I started to process what was happening, what had happened, when I opened my mind to addressing what I was going through and what was going to come next. And it was at that point that I actually said to the nurse, yes, actually, I do think I could do with talking to someone. And it was quite nerve-wracking because I always think of myself as a level-headed, fairly sensible person. And never before have I needed to speak to a counsellor. And I think there probably is some, I can't remember the word because I have a tamoxifen SIV brain, but you sort of feel, gosh, if I see a counsellor, that means there's something really, really wrong with me. And what are people going to think? And, you know, what
stigma.
Am I going to think?
You think there was
That's
a stigma.
The word. Yeah, thank you very much. And so I was fairly hesitant, but then I really felt, actually, I need to do this because I'm getting so overwhelmed. I'm getting so anxious. I was obviously worried about the fear of recurrence, as Kelly mentioned earlier, but there were lots of other things that were causing anxiety. And it wasn't all to do with cancer. It was just every day, struggling to get through the day from the moment I got up to the end of the day. And I thought, I can't go on like this. This is ridiculous. This anxiety is eating into every aspect of my daily life. How am I going to pull myself together? How am I going to get back to work? How am I going to cope when my mum doesn't pop round every day? And, you know, had two young children, had to get, you know, to and from school and so on. And taking the opportunity to speak to the counsellor, I think was probably one of the best decisions that I made. And for me, and I know everyone is very different, but for me, it helped me enormously. And a lot of the tools and strategies that she talked through with me stay with me today.
Can you give us, for anybody listening, and for Delassie and Kelly and Cody and myself, give us some of those strategies briefly, Sarah, because yeah. we're all for practical help.
So the best one was always, she was always telling me to bring myself into the present. Everything's okay here and now, right now, where you're sitting, everything's fine. Put your hand on your stomach, close your eyes, take a couple of deep breaths in and out. Remind yourself you're here, you're in the present, everything is fine. Take another deep breath in and out. You're here, you're in the present, right at this moment, everything is fine. It was all about bringing myself back into the present. So effectively, it was mindfulness that yes. she was teaching me. And I still do that exercise. It's one that just takes like half a second, 30 seconds to do. It's so, so helpful. If I feel any sort of anxiety bubbling, whether it's, I mean, I've got my annual mammogram coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'm starting to feel a little bit anxious about it. And I know that anxiety will build and build and build. And so this is an exercise that I will do between now and then to help bring myself back to the present.
Thank you for that. Dee, I want to ask, because you are a young woman, you're 30 now, you were diagnosed 2 years ago, single mum of a little boy. He's, how old is he now?
5 now.
And what's his name?
Elijah.
Elijah. So he was 3 when you were diagnosed, is that right?
Yeah, so he was 2, but I found out like 5 days before his 3rd birthday.
Right. And when you, how did you discover it? What did you discover?
So I was actually watching a program that you was featured in. It was the full breast cancer Full Monty special.
Oh, yeah. The Full Monty, yeah.
Yeah, so I was watching it subconsciously, like I was on my phone and the TV was just on in the background. And a part in the series came where you was taught how to like examine your breasts and stuff. Mm. And as I said before, it never dawned on me to ever examine my breasts because I never thought that I would be a breast cancer patient. I never thought I could get breast cancer. So the following morning, I went into the shower and examined myself and I found a lump. So, if it wasn't for that show, I don't think I would have had that process to even check myself.
Wow. And that was the message of the program. For those who don't know the program, it's ITV. It was the most incredible experience to be part of. A group of women all touched in some way by cancer, and the whole point of the program, we had to strip off and do a routine at the end, choreographed by the fantastic Ashley Banjo. Very nerve-wracking. We had to do it in front of a live audience. And the whole point of that program was to get the message across to people like you, Delassie, that you need to check yourself. It doesn't matter what age you are, please check yourself. And I'm so glad you did. Obviously, it's distressing to hear that you then found a lump, but thank God you then went to the doctors because if you had, as you say, if you hadn't found it, who knows? Yeah. Who knows what, if your little boy would have still had his mum 2 years later.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Wow. Okay. Yeah. For those listening who may be coming up to that moment of ending treatment right now, what would your advice be to them? Because they might be worrying, like you said earlier, Kelly, they're about to fall off a cliff. What would you say?
It's a really difficult question, actually, because I'm not sure I know the answer. I'm still sort of finding my way. But I would say talk to people. take up the offers of counselling if it's there. If not, you can look on Macmillan's website and find your way there. It's available to anybody that needs it. And that really does help. The other thing that I've found has helped is having something to focus on each day. I'm still struggling with looking too far into the future. I won't plan a holiday for next year. I'm too scared that something's going to go wrong and that won't be able to happen. But I look at each day and think, what can be my purpose today? And I found that returning to work as well has really helped me because I love my job. I love the people I work with. And I can remember my first day back at work, which was only a few weeks ago, saying that was the first day I feel like I've actually lived since being diagnosed.
Really?
Because I was just getting on with something normal. Mm. And all the time I was at home, I was just consumed with this fear and these meandering thoughts about everything related to my treatment, what I've been through, what the future holds. And to sort of go and take myself away to something else really helped the distraction of my mind. So I just try to look at focusing on something each day. It can be something really small. It could just be getting on top of my pile of washing or anything, but I need to have a purpose each day. But also being kind, be kind to yourself. You know, you have been through something really tough, and it's okay to have those days where you find it difficult, and you've got to allow that to happen. You've got to let yourself have a cry or feel really angry or whatever it might be. And other days you will feel on top of the world. I have those days too, and I'm hoping that there will be more of those as time goes on. I'm still very fresh out of treatment, so the ups and downs are quite big, but over time I'm hoping that will flatten out.
I think it will, Kelly. Yeah. If it, you know, going from my own experience, Cody, what would your advice be to someone who may be coming up to the end of treatment right now? What would you say?
I think the thing is, cancer, for me, my treatment was about a year. And I would say, you know, it's like it's a year that your year has been turned upside down. So allow yourself at the very least a year to get back to, you know, any kind of normalcy. Any time before that, allow yourself to immerse in whatever you're going through. If today you want to stay in bed, if you don't want to take a shower, if you want to be selfish and you don't want to deal with the kids, allow people to help you, because not only will that help you become a whole person, because if you take that time out now, you will heal faster than trying to fight your body, because whether you do it now or you do it later, at some point you have to do it. And allow people to help you. If people offer help, take it. If they don't, ask for it. And just have times. I now have my selfish days where I refuse to deal with things, even things that I'm supposed to deal with, but I will refuse. I will, like today, I am not peopling. I am not talking to people. I'm just staying in bed, or I'm staying in my house and I'm watching crap telly, because that's what my body needs.
Fair enough. Sarah, what about you? What would your advice be?
So I have two pieces of advice, and I finished my treatment 4 years ago. So I kind of feel I've got 4 years worth, unlike Kelly and Dee, that I've learned a lot. And my first piece of advice is that whilst you might feel like you've dropped off the edge of a cliff, or you've been set adrift when you finish your treatment, there really is so much support out there. Unfortunately, a lot of hospitals just don't have the resources to tell you about the support that's available, or even to provide post-treatment support for yourselves. And actually, that can feel really hard when you're at one of those hospitals. But there is so much support available from all sorts of charities and organisations. You can look for it online, you can ask your hospital, you can go into your local cancer support centre, or social media, the Future Dreams website. We've got a lot of information on there for people who finish treatment, where you can find it. There really is a lot of support out there. It's just, unfortunately, more often than not, down to the patient who has to find it for themselves. And when you're in a really difficult place, it really does feel quite tough, but it's out there. And my second piece of advice, which I think follows on from what Kelly and Cody were saying, is to be patient with yourself, because you're not going to go straight back to the person you were before you had cancer. If ever, you might end up being, you know, slightly different, living a slightly different life, whatever it is. But be patient with yourself whilst you're going through that process of recovery, recuperation, processing what you've been through, and really just giving yourself the time that you need. As Cody said, if it's a year of treatment, you may well need a year to recover, but it's really, really important not to push yourself and not to have too high an expectation of yourself. Just be patient.
Similar to what all of the ladies have said, to just be patient with yourself. Don't be too hard on yourself. It's easy to, I think, push yourself so much so that it's just too much. So just take your time. There are plenty of support groups, which I found actually late after my diagnosis on stuff like Instagram. There's a lot of pages on Instagram that offer support and help. So I've had quite a few people come to me saying how helpful it was.
Brilliant.
So there's a lot of pages and stuff out there.
Absolutely. In terms of my own experience, we've talked about counselling. This is just a brief insight into what happened at the end of my treatment. I was absolutely in floods of tears with gratitude, I think, when I got to the end of radiotherapy. And I was also euphoric. It was this weird mixture of emotions. And then I went straight to work and busy doing all that sort of stuff. And after a little while, I thought, WTF just happened. And I thought, you know what, I might have to go and see a counsellor, because I was doing the whole, as Dee said, you know, I don't want to bore everyone. Jesus, I've just, you know, it's been so boring for everyone this past year. I thought, right, I'm gonna go and see a counsellor. And then, because of tamoxifen, which is a tablet that patients are given to help stop breast cancer coming back, it was giving me really bad joint pain. I thought, right, okay, I need to sort this out, because I feel like I'm an arthritic 80-year-old. And so I started going to the gym, which I'd never done any exercise for many, many years. And because I needed, and going to the gym, doing the exercise helped me manage the joint pain. And after a while, I thought, I don't need to see a counsellor, because my body's getting stronger. And somehow it made my mind stronger. I don't know if that's a normal thing. I don't know anything about exercise. I'm not an expert, but that's what happened to me. And I did want to push myself after treatment. And I did want to be out there doing a million things and saying yes to everything. And Delassie, that's why I did, you know, the all new Monty on ITV, because I thought, this is, just say yes to stuff, because I don't know how long I've got. So, everybody's experience is different. And I want to thank you all for being so open about your own experience and for giving some really incredible practical advice, hopefully, to the people who are listening. So thank you, Kelly and Cody and Delassie and Sarah. It's been absolutely brilliant. And if you want to find out more information, then all you need to do is go to the Future Dreams website. There's loads of information on there, including stuff from Sarah. And we're all on Instagram as well, I think. And yeah, thank you very much for listening. This has been a 6 Foot 6 and Factory Original production. Ladies, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity hopes you found this podcast helpful. We fund awareness, support and research. If you would like to help us do more, please text WECARE to 70500 to make a £5 donation, or visit our website at futuredreams.org.uk/donate. Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity will receive 100% of your donation. Text costs your donation plus one standard rate text message, UK only. Always get the bill payer's permission. We would like to contact you on your mobile phone with news and updates. If you would rather opt out, then please add no info to the end of your message. For example, we care, no info. Thank you again for listening.